Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Muskies Matters with Lakeland University head football coach Colin Bruton. Muskies Matters is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Lakeland coach questions about the Muskies, football or sports in general, or just seek the coach's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, the coach talks to us about the record-setting performance of Desmond Eddy. He gives advice on how a student should choose which college they want to attend. And what are some signs that you know you're talking to a head football coach? Let's find out on Muskies Matters.
Well, let's welcome back Coach Bruton this week. Coach, do you have team updates for us?
Yeah, just a great week. It's senior day, so we're going to be honoring 14 seniors this week after our last home game. And it's always exciting when you have senior day, but you know you get to play another one. So, you know, last week with the win over Concordia, we clinched the, you know, at least a share of the MAC title and clinched the automatic berth to the playoffs. So we're looking forward to that, but certainly not overlooking Rockford and what should be a really exciting day on campus for our seniors and a great way to honor a group that's had a ton of success at Lakeland and really are leaving a really cool legacy here with four straight conference championships.
Well, let's look at last week's victory for a moment. You defeat Concordia Chicago, gives you the conference title. What was the feeling of the team after clinching that victory?
You know, it was a little subdued. You know, we've been there before now. It's the fourth straight year of winning the NAC and the third straight year of, you know, making the national playoffs. And I think our guys had a certain expectation and a certain, you know, unsatisfaction with just winning the NAC. You know, they want bigger, they want better, and they want to continue to build this thing in the right direction. And I think they're looking at it saying, hey, we have the ability to, you know, to do more and to accomplish more, and that's what they want to do, you know. So I think while they were excited, it kind of felt like more, it was just the next step in this journey for our guys. So we're not going to take it for granted. You know, you never want to take winning for granted and take the success for granted, but, you know, I don't think it wasn't quite as celebratory as it may have been otherwise. I think also the score of the game, you know, we won it fairly comfortably, and I think because of that, it was a little bit of a foregone conclusion probably early in the first half or midway through the first half. We felt pretty comfortable in that football game, so it wasn't like it was a game that came down to the wire or something like that.
Desmond Eddy has a record-setting day for you on the ground. What were your thoughts about his performance?
It was really impressive. He's damn good. And, he went for 258 in the first half alone. I think he finished with 308 and didn't play in the fourth quarter at all. And he's one of those guys that every time he touches it, you think he's going to score a touchdown. And he's doing a great job. And, you know, I think the last 3 weeks he's got almost 900 yards of total offense in just three games, which is crazy. And, you know, you try not to get numb to stuff like this and some of the offensive performances we're putting up, but it almost gets that way. You know, we were a couple weeks ago and he kind of took over full-time and really is getting back healthy. You know, I told our coaches he's going to set the single-game rushing record this year and didn't know when it would happen. You know, and he had a shot a handful of weeks ago against Wisconsin Lutheran. He had 190 at the half and thought he had a chance to break the record. But it just seems like, you know, you're cautious to not get numb to these type of performances. He had 300 yards rushing, and it just seemed like another day, you know, and that's a testament to how good he's been, how good our offense has been in general, and, you know, the offense line, the job they're doing, and things like that. So it's exciting, and he's a special talent. He's one of the best ones we've ever seen, and, you know, hopefully he keeps it going.
As well as he's playing and numbers Michael usually puts up and your receivers, it's almost like watching a video game almost.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, we were joking, you know, this week that, again, like, you know, 500 yards, you know, we'll put up five, and I think we had 599 last week, and it just feels a little ho-hum, and that's, you know, probably unfortunate. We shouldn't take it for granted. You know, there were some years here where we were, you know, not quite as talented offensively or not quite as talented on either side of the ball, and these numbers weren't coming like this. So it's certainly exciting, but we feel like we can play even better. That's kind of the scary thing, and the exciting thing is, you know, we feel like we haven't even hit our potential yet as an offense. And you know, I think we have some big numbers coming ahead of us.
While Des had a great day for you, in watching that game, the thing that really impressed me was the holes that were being created by your offensive line, and he was just taking advantage of that.
Yeah, the offensive line's been outstanding. That's really been the biggest difference. We've always been very talented in the skill positions, probably the last 3 to 4 years. But the development of our offensive line has really made the difference in our offense. And we're at the point now where we're running the ball really effectively, and that wasn't always the case in previous years. And, you know, teams are, you know, they really got to pick their poison when they play us. If they want to try to stack the box and put numbers in the box. You know, we take advantage in the passing game, and if they feel like, hey, they want to try to take away Michael and the receivers, you know, we feel like we can run the ball, and our offensive line is just doing a great job. So, you know, it's a good problem to have for us, is that, you know, we're trying to get all these guys touches and trying to spread the ball around, spread the wealth around. And last week was Dez's turn, and, you know, before that, you know, there's been some games it was Aldrado's turn, and there's been other games where we've thrown the ball really effectively. But the one consistent has always been the offensive line. And, you know, we're playing really six guys up front, and they're doing a great job, and they've gotten better as the year went on. Coach Wellman's doing a great job with those guys, and they just continue to get better, and they're gaining more confidence. And I think they're seeing themselves now starting to dominate football games, and that's pretty cool to see.
The defense has five sacks and three interceptions overall. How did you feel about their performance?
Yeah, it was a great performance. It was, you know, it was, we got back to attacking. That's the way we want to play, and really were able to bring some different pressure looks. And, you know, having the lead helps, you know, takes teams and makes them a little bit more one-dimensional where they got to throw to catch up. But I thought we just did a great job of getting pressure and continuing to keep pressure. And, you know, I felt like Concordia's quarterback never really felt very comfortable in the pocket. You know, he was getting hit a lot even when we weren't sacking him, and that's always a good thing. And, you know, we got back just being a little bit more aggressive with our blitz package, and that's ideally where we want to be defensively. And, you know, so I'm really happy with the performance. I thought, you know, we turned the ball over offensively in our first two possessions. I thought we did a good job defensively of getting stops and kind of answering the call in those situations. We've been pretty good in those sudden change situations all year. And then the third quarter offensively, we slowed a little bit as well, and you know, being able to you know, to get some stops, just kind of keep us in control of that football game was important.
This week you take on Rockford University. Because you've already earned the conference championship, do you rest your starters or you just continue to go for the victories?
No, we're playing. We're playing the guys that are healthy. We're a little banged up. You know, we're a little banged up. So Michael got a little banged up last week, so he may not play. You know, he's rehabbing, and we're expecting that he'll be back, you know, for a playoff game in a week, but he may not play. And we got a couple other guys, you know, a couple skill guys, and just kind of down the line, we've probably been without, you know, 6 to 8 guys every practice, haven't been able to go, that are kind of starters or key guys for us. So we may, you know, try to play more guys, but we're certainly not resting. We're certainly, you know, playing to win this football game. And it's important to go in with momentum going into the playoffs. It's important to continue to improve. And that's the thing that we continue to talk to our guys about, is we can't be the same team that we were, you know, last week when we tried to go win a playoff game. And understand the challenge that's going to be to go, you know, beat one of the top, you know, 5 or 10 teams in the country in the first round. And we got to continue to improve. And that's been our message to our guys. And the way we do that is by focusing on Rockford and focusing on, you know, executing our game plan and doing all the little things we need to do to beat Rockford. So while we hope to play a lot of guys on Saturday, you know, we're certainly not taking our foot off the gas in any way.
What are some things that you look at in Rockford that impress you about the way that they play?
Yeah, I think offensively they really run the ball effectively. I think they're third in the conference in rushing. They got two really quality backs. Chance Manning's been a first-team all-league back for them, and really is just a guy that's just a talent. You know, he's a slippery back. He's an undersized kid, but has good speed and good ability to you know, to make things happen in the open field. And then they got a physical back that really hammers you, comers in. So they kind of have that thunder and lightning type backfield. So, you know, they got some good players, and you know, I think they play really hard, and that's the thing that we got to be ready. We got to match their intensity and their effort level right from the start, and make sure we're ready to play with senior day and things like that. There's always some distractions with that, and you know, you want it to be a celebration for your seniors, and it's a great thing, but it's only a celebration if you win the football game. So we got to make sure that, you know, we match their intensity and their effort.
Because this is the last home game for the seniors, what are some things you're hoping for them, and what are some memories that they've left with you?
Yeah, it's been a great group. You know, it's just been a really, really special group of seniors. We got 5 senior captains, and 4 of them were captains of our football team as juniors. You know, so it's been a group that's provided leadership. You know, and I took over as the head coach, you know, 3 years ago, and being promoted from the defensive coordinator position. You know, it was this group that was going from freshmen to sophomores that really jumped on board, and you know, along with the upperclassmen with those two previous teams. But these guys really bought in the off season, bought in the weight room, and just a great group of young men that have done a lot to change the culture of Lakeland football, and done a great job in the classroom. You know, the 13 seniors are among our best students in the classroom, and they're guys that have taking a lot of pride in being very professional in the classroom. Guys that have sat in the front row, guys that have made sure they, you know, developed a relationship with professors, guys that have been in the community, working, you know, youth football camps and just meeting with different kids and just doing a great job of just embracing what it means to be a college athlete, but also embracing what it means to be a Lakeland football player and always being a positive example for everybody on campus and off campus. So it's a really special group. You know, you get emotional when you think about coaching these kids for, and it really coming down to the last couple weeks. You know, you hope the best for them. You hope that they get out of life with what they want out of life. And it's a group that really has the potential to do a lot of great things because it's a group that's really charismatic, a group that has a ton of personality, a group that's really, really hardworking, you know, and just has talents in so many different areas. So it's, you know, like I said, it's bittersweet. You wish you could coach these kids forever, but you also understand that when they sign up for it, it's a four-year process, and you hope that they have a great four-year experience. But they've given us as coaches and as people in our program and people on campus, they've given us 4 years of memories, and we owe them a lot of gratitude for what they've done for our program.
Well, let's head to fan questions. We start with Jill, who would like to know, are there teams from the past years in the playoffs that you would like another crack at, or do you want to face someone new this season in the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, it looks like, you know, we played Whitewater last year. It doesn't look like they're going to qualify this year. And we played Wheaton 2 years ago, and it doesn't look like they're probably likely to make it in either. Both teams are kind of bubble teams, but from looking at kind of the analysis, looks like both of them may be on the wrong side of the bubble. So it looks like we're going to play someone new, and really it's about matchups. It's about finding, trying to get the best matchup possible. You know, we understand our position. We understand our conference has not had success in the playoffs, and as a result, you know, we're going to play one of the big dogs. We're going to play a 10-0 football team most likely, and you know, there's three or four different possibilities, and you know, it's kind of pick your poison. You know, we know we're going to play a really, really good football team, and we got to prepare our guys that regardless of who we're matched up with on Sunday, you know, that's going to be the best matchup for us. So I think our guys are confident. The biggest thing I think for our guys is they've been there before, so there's not the awe of being in the situation and everything that goes along with the playoffs as far as the travel and just the pomp and circumstance and the way the NCAA handles playoff games and different regulations they have and stuff. Our guys are going to be very comfortable, and we've been building towards this. You know, we kind of knew when we took over that first year we made it to the playoffs, we weren't quite ready as a program. We weren't mature enough as a program, and our guys needed to experience it. And last year we felt like we competed, we played better, and we did it with a lot of those guys being guys that are now returning in our program, you know, the current senior group. So we feel like this is the group that's really ready to take that next step, and we're looking forward to, you know, taking our shot in the first round, you know, in 2 weeks here.
Ben would like to know, how do you compare this year's team in terms of readiness to compete and be competitive in comparison to previous seasons that went into the playoffs?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've said it from the start. I think this has been our most talented team, our most talented playoff team. I think overall, it's been this group. We probably have a little bit more margin for error than some of our other teams did the past 2 years especially. And then, like I said, just the ability to have the experience of playing in the playoffs is important to our guys. We're not going to be in awe of being there. We're not going to be in awe of what's going on around us. And we've played those quality teams. You know, we played Whitewater, who was number one in the country last year. You know, we played Platteville, who's a top 10 team. We played them this year. So we've played some of those UW schools. We played some of those perennial playoff teams, and I think that prepared us. You know, I don't think our guys are going to be in awe of any opponent that we draw. They're going to be confident, and we're going to have to play very, very well. I mean, that's the one consistent, is that we're going to have to play extremely well and extremely hard and extremely disciplined. But we feel like our mentality from the start of this year was, you know, we expected to be in this situation, and that may come off as arrogance, make them off as cocky, but that was our expectations, that we were going to be back in this game, and we've been preparing all year to play this game in 2 weeks. So we feel like we're ready, and we'll take our best shot again.
Neil would like to know, do you and the other coaches pull practical jokes on one another?
You know, not too much, not too much. We're joking around all the time, but usually not on each other. So we'll pull it on the players occasionally. We got a reflection list, and that's kind of our list. We put it on the whiteboard in our main office, and that's a list of guys who maybe had a minor rules infraction. You know, maybe they were late to a meeting or something like that, and they get a chance to reflect on that. And reflection is Coach Simon, our running backs coach, putting them through a pretty grueling conditioning session after practice. So, you know, we like to put random guys on the reflection list and get them worried that they did something wrong and they're trying to figure it out, and then we're just laughing behind the scenes. So we pull more practice or more pranks on the players than we do each other, I guess. So we're pretty good about not pranking each other, but with the players, we'll try to do some stuff.
Hannah asks, she says, watching what is going on at Louisville with their basketball program, is there some satisfaction that you have that you don't have to worry about those kind of scandals at a school where there are no scholarship athletes?
Yeah, you know, I think there's always the worry within your program. You want to make sure you're doing things the right way. I think there's certainly a different aspect at the Division I level, especially that major Division I level with boosters and with shoe contracts and all that kind of stuff that we don't deal with. You know, I don't believe any of my players have ever gotten an envelope of cash after a game from a booster or anything like that, which is you know, it's not something I have to worry about, and I'm sure at that level those guys are worrying about that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think there's some certain satisfaction with not having to worry about that. There's also, you know, a check that says $2 million a year or $3 million a year or $4 million a year for those coaches. So I think it's part of the you know, part of the compensation is that you have a little bit more stress maybe with the boosters and things like that. So it's a shame this is happening. It's a shame that you know, amateur athletics hasn't been able to figure out a model that makes sense, I think, especially at that Division I level, to compensate players or pay players or, you know, and I don't have the answer to how that works, but I think there probably is a way to take some of this corruption out of the game by just compensating the players a little bit, and it hasn't been able to find out. And as a result, you know, I think there's probably more cheating and more corruption going on than we even know about. And, you know, I think the coaches probably know about it, and they're probably all bending the rules a little bit, and that's a shame.
Sam would like to know, what is a piece of advice you would give to a college student who is looking for the right college choice for themselves?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. We talk to kids all the time about fit, you know, so you got to find the place that fits for you. The first thing I would tell kids is visit 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 colleges, as many as you possibly can. And after doing that, and especially if you're looking to play, you know, you'll know after you've visited those schools what school felt right. And I think a lot of it's a feel, and make sure you ask the right questions, things like that. But even if you're not looking to play, visit schools and get a chance to meet people and walk around campus and see what's the right choice for you. And there's a right choice for you, and it's got to be a personal decision. We always talk to kids about really the fit comes down to three things. It comes down to an academic fit, you know, so making sure a place has your major, has the program that you want to get into, has the ability to have the resources you need to be successful academically, and then it's going to challenge you in the right way academically. So we talk about an academic fit. If an academic fit isn't there, we tell kids, hey, you know, as much as we'd love to have you as a football player at Lakeland, you know, this isn't the right place for you. You should look somewhere else. You know, we don't have, for instance, engineering as a major. And although a kid might think our football program is great and we may love the kid as a player, if we don't have his major, you know, we're not going to be the right school. So we talk about that. We talk about a social fit next, you know, so, you know, size of school, distance from home, type of campus. We're a rural campus, so we're a different feel than a lot of other places. We're not in a big city. We're not surrounded by concrete. We're surrounded on all four sides by Wisconsin farmland and forest, you know, and that's a different feel. And some kids love that. Some kids like the small town feel. Some kids like the fact that it's a little bit isolated and there's free from distractions. But that has to be a fit socially. You know, we're also a school of about 850 students, you know, so we're definitely a smaller school. You may be saying, hey, 850 is too small, and maybe 40,000 at the University of Wisconsin is too big, but there's a number that's probably right for you socially. And then if those two things are a fit, then we start talking to the football fit. You know, so I think that's the biggest thing is you got to answer some of those questions for yourself when looking at a college. And the best way to do it is to obviously ask questions, but get out and try to visit as many of the schools as you can.
Mac asks, he says, do you think that there will be a day when robots will be the players on the football field?
I think it's possible. I've been, you know, obviously you hear about the CTE and the concussions and all that kind of stuff, and I don't think football is going away, and I don't think that time is coming anytime soon, but I think we're going to reach a point in time, you know, somewhere in the future, maybe long after I'm gone, that robots are going to be doing a lot of things for us, you know, whether it's in manufacturing or whether it's, you know, cooking our food or whatever it is, and, you know, it wouldn't shock me if that extended to football.
Paul asks, what are things that you feel are good for a player to do to keep in football shape for next season now that football season is winding down?
Yeah, we talk a lot in our program with strength conditioning about functional movements. So a lot of it's being in the weight room. A lot of it's, you know, getting the running work and stuff like that. You know, the biggest thing I'd say is if your coaches have a plan, and most of them do, and hopefully yours does. Make sure you're following that coach's plan. I think that's the first and foremost. Is that sometimes players get they think there's a magic workout or a magic workout plan, and a lot of it is it's similar. There's a lot of similarities between workout plans, and there's a point of being with your teammates and being with the guys you're gonna be playing with that's important, and sometimes that's even more important than what exactly the workout says. So that way, I guess, would be the first thing I'd say. And then obviously it's being in the weight room. It's being, making sure you're getting, all the running work in. Our workouts start with about 30 minutes of agility training. So before we even hit the weight room, we're doing 30 minutes of, working on flexibility, working on explosion, working on top end speed, working on, planting and cutting and all that kind of agility work. And we do that every day, and it's something we really believe in. I think that's probably the thing that most players, don't do. Most players want to get in the weight room. They're willing to get in the weight room. They want to throw big weight up, but they're not always willing to do the conditioning and agility work, and they think they can wait till June or July to start that, and then they come into camp out of shape, and they're not going to see the gains in the weight room if they're not doing that stuff as well.
Ryan asks of you, what was the best decade for music?
Whew, that's a tough one. We play music all throughout practice, so we've been big on like the 2000s hip hop kind of as our Spotify playlist or Pandora playlist. So that's been good for practice. I listen to all kinds of music. I listen to some country music. I listen to, like I said, more of the 2000s hip hop. I listen to a little bit of classic rock. So I'm kind of all over the map. I like some Christian music, some of the Christian rock stuff that's out. So I'm kind of all over the place, but if I'm going to go, I'll probably go 2000 hip-hop right now, just because that's what we've been listening to most often at practice.
Thomas would like to know, he says, watching these wildfires in California and the floods in Texas and Florida, it makes me wonder if I had to get out of my house in like 1 hour, what I would absolutely believe I had to take with me. What would you consider essential that you would have to grab and put in your car before getting away?
I definitely would start with my wife and two kids. So they would come with me. I wouldn't let them stay in the fire. Beyond that, I don't have a ton of I don't have a ton of real sentimental. I don't have the photo albums or things like that at the house. I'd grab my cell phone. I'm definitely a technology. I'm a little bit addicted to the iPhone, and I would have to have that with me. So I guess my cell phone, and beyond that, I guess some clothes, things like that. Like I said, I don't have a ton of stuff that I would feel like I would need to grab. We got some family photos. I'd like to obviously take those with, but now in the digital age, you kind of still have those things preserved. So I think probably some family photographs, probably some clothes, maybe. I don't know. There's not a ton of possessions in my house that I'd feel like I couldn't live without. So that's a tough one for me.
Don would like to know, if you were going bald, would you just shave your head or ride out with what you had?
I think you got to shave your head. I'm 100% on board with shaving your head. So that's probably the way I would go. Shave it, get rid of it, pretend like you're not losing it, and go that route. The horseshoe pattern isn't really working for anybody, I don't think. So I'd shave it.
Stan would like to know if the Whopper or the Big Mac is the best.
I can honestly say I've never eaten a Whopper or a Big Mac in my life.
Really? Wow.
Not a huge McDonald's or Burger King fan. I will tell you this, Stan. If you're eating a Whopper or a Big Mac, you need to find a Five Guys, and you need to start eating burgers from Five Guys, because Five Guys is outstanding. If I could be a national spokesman for Five Guys, I would. So I don't eat a ton of fast food, or try not to. But I think I would go with Five Guys instead. If I have to choose between the two, I'm probably more of a McDonald's fan than I am a Burger King fan. So I'd probably go the Big Mac. But if I do eat at Burger King, usually I'm getting like a double cheeseburger. I'm not going the full Big Mac. So, don't have a ton of advice, but the one advice is find yourself a Five Guys and go that route.
Chuck asks, he says, you remember Jeff Foxworthy with his thing about if you may be a redneck if. So give us a few things that would tell us if you may be a football coach if.
Oh, that's a tough one. I would say you may be a football coach if you can't watch a football game without correcting technique or without talking X's and O's. My wife will be not real happy because I'll be watching a game and I'm yelling about some concept that's going on, and she's just trying to figure out who's got the football, or trying to watch the game. So I'm not real fun to watch football with, because I think as a coach, you always watch it as a coach, and it's really hard to try to shut down. And although I love watching college football, I love watching pro football, it's really hard to shut down and just watch simply as a fan. So I'd say that's probably the first one. You're probably a football coach if you know how to fold your practice plan to get it just right in your pocket. That's one of the other ones. You're probably a football coach if you have multiple whistles, and you can always find a whistle laying around somewhere because you've had them accumulating from a number of years. So that would be a few. If I had more time, I'd probably come up with a good list, but that's probably the few off the top of my head.
John would like to know, he says, my wife wanted to do ham this year for Thanksgiving. Ham. It has to be turkey. Please tell her I'm right.
John is 110% correct here. First of all, turkey's the superior meat to ham. So I think that's the starting point. The next point of it is it's Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving means turkey. So all these people that are trying to change, sometimes you got to be a little bit of a traditionalist, and Thanksgiving means turkey. So, John, I'm 100% behind you on this one. Tell your wife she's crazy. This isn't quite a divorceable offense or anything like that, but this is one that you definitely got to win, and one you shouldn't back down from. Usually I would say with like 90% of arguments with the wife, it's better off just to back down and let her win the argument. But this one I think is one that's worth fighting for.
So if she was in favor of ham and had a cat, that would be divorceable, though. But
if she had a cat, it never would have gotten to that point. So, but yeah, if there was a cat coming in the house with ham, we'd be signing papers.
Brian would like to know, what do you do with your child when he still wants to wear his Halloween costume?
I think it probably depends on what the Halloween costume is and the age of the child. If your child's 12 and he's trying to go to seventh grade dressed as a pirate, you probably got a bigger issue than your 2-year-old wanting to dress like a dinosaur in the house, So I think that's probably the start of it. It's probably not the best parenting advice, but I'd probably just bribe him with more Halloween candy. If you take off the pirate costume, we'll give you some more Snickers or something like that. I'm not sure that's the best way to do it, but I guess it's good to know that the child likes Halloween and they're embracing the holiday and all that kind of stuff, but I think it really is probably more dependent on age and the type of costume. So, so that's a tough one for Brian. I wish the best of luck.
Our main statement this week is from Luke, who says, this show would be so much better if you had a better host than Rob.
That's a ridiculous comment. I cannot support Luke on this one. Rob's doing a fantastic job, and I don't know if Luke is a friend of yours or maybe not a friend of yours, but... But yeah, seems like we can't support Luke, so I'm gonna boo Luke.
And let's end this week with why it's great to be a Muskie.
Yeah, like I said, it's senior day, and this has been just an outstanding group. This group of seniors just looked at it. 28-11 so far in the regular season, 21-2 within the conference. They've won four conference championships. But like I said, they've just meant so much to our program on and off the field. And this is the type of group that you're going to look back on, 30 or 40 years later in coaching, I think, and say, hey, that was a group that was a really fun group to coach, and a group that always played hard and always did things the right way. So it's a great opportunity to celebrate those guys, and we get to do that on Saturday, and then on Sunday we get to look forward to the selection show and find out where we're going, and that's going to be a really exciting week next week, just getting ready for a playoff game and everything that comes with it. So it's really a great time to be a Muskie.
Sounds great. Well, thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
We want to thank Coach Bruton for joining us on Muskies Matters this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Lakeland coach, please send them to us at ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. That's ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pinier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Muskies Matters.